All right, Maddie, what are we talking about today?
All right, today we're talking about Satan, the Illuminati, Bewitched, Anton LaVey, the Witchmobile, the Kennedy family's personal warlock, the occult revival, possibly the one good thing the John Birch Society did, the Republican presidential primary of 1976, Rosemary's Baby, and the time that the Antichrist served as president of the United States.
Hail no, Satan!
Matt, it seems like we have an incredible day today. I'm very excited. I know you already, we went through what we have today. It's going to be incredible. So how are you doing? And I'm ready to go.
Well, I'm doing great because I have learned some of the craziest stuff ever in the history of this show. And I've learned some crazy stuff when we do this show. But this is a whole new level. So we're going to get right to it, except for the fact that we have some normal business to do, which is the like this episode. Subscribe to our channel, turn on notifications. That is extra important now because thanks to our wonderful producer, Doug, we have more content coming out. He's been putting up clips from previous episodes throughout the week. Soon we'll have some original exclusive to the short format shorts in the short format. And so the notifications turning on is much more important because now it's not just one time a week. It's multiple times.
I love it.
And then if you're just listening to this on the audio podcast again, rate it, review us. It would be great because if you don't, I'm just going to send Anton LaVey to your house and he's going to annoy you like he annoys me. So
yeah, oh God, I know he does. Yeah. Also, our podcast is exploding too. So
yes,
you know that's another really good point that we need to make, and I'm really excited about this. The show, you know, we're getting better and better, yeah. But this one I'm really excited about today. I don't think people realize you are supposed to surprise me in these episodes, and I want to make sure that people understand that the thing is that with my vast knowledge of crazy, Matt still has the ability to surprise me, crush me, absolutely humble me based on the fact that he finds things that are so insane and so applicable to today. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Yes. And it is a fun challenge to try and surprise you because sometimes I think I've got you and then you like totally know what I'm going for. And you're like, I was like, God, I had a whole week built up to that, but no. You know why our podcast is exploding?
I because we're good.
Okay. Also, Satan.
Yes. Yeah. That is probably true. You know, and by the way, you know, we've talked about this before. I was called the tool of the Antichrist after I officiated the same sex wedding. So I was also called, you know, general of the Sodomite armies. I was also accused because of the same sex wedding of changing the sexual orientation of children, which was a QAnon specific conspiracy theory about the deep state and globalists that were running a cabal of cannibalistic Democrats who were harvesting children for adrenochrome. So, so I'm pretty excited about this, that the podcast is also linked to the type of special tool of Antichrist things that I have been accused of. So I'm pretty excited about that, Matt.
It's wonderful. Yes. So, all right. I can't believe you can get through, like you can say all that stuff so well that it's just like, I've heard you say it before, and I still like marvel every time you get through like the tool.
I think the general of the Sodomite armies might be one of the most original things.
That one's pretty awesome. Now, what's above a general?
In the Sodomite armies?
I mean, just in general. Okay, let's just move. Okay.
I would say it would be the party coordinator. The Twister board guy?
I don't know. It was a legit question. I don't really know military ranking. Do you have a superior in the Sodomite army or are you the superior? Okay. In the Sodomite army, are you at the top or the bottom? Okay.
Oh my God. I think the person above the general of the Sodomite armies is the person who protects the rear.
All right. So we're calling this episode basically the Satanic Panic Part 1. It may be a little bit more like the Satanic Panic, the Prelude, And next week, we'll actually have Satanic Panic Part 2. So we're going to do this chronologically because I think there's some really underappreciated elements here. You know, we usually, when talking about the Satanic Panic, we usually tread the same ground. It's Dungeons and Dragons. It's heavy metal. It's McMartin Preschool. It's Geraldo. All that stuff, right? But there had to be something in the atmosphere in the world that created that situation where that stuff could take hold. And I think it really started with a show called Bewitched.
Oh, goodness.
In 1964.
Ooh. With Dick York, then followed by Dick Sargent.
Right. And I remember that. Yeah. And you want to know what? It's kind of embarrassing, but like I, for a decent amount of time, thought that Sergeant York was a biopic of them. That's true. I was also watching Nick at Night with my grandfather, because I've said this before, as a child I had the taste of an 80-year-old man, so like I was, you know, I'm thinking, oh wow, they made a movie about those guys.
No, I love this, because it was Elizabeth Montgomery, then we had the two dicks, and I think the last dick was I think the last three seasons, is that correct? And then the first
three, you got that.
Yeah. So, no, I just wanted to show you my Bewitched knowledge, you know?
Well, you know what? Here, first surprise. Did you know that there's actually some interesting ties to the JFK assassination in the origin of Bewitched?
God, you got to be kidding me. No, of course I didn't. I mean, no, I didn't know that, you know, that's amazing. That's really amazing.
These are two facts that like I have found very mind-blowing. Okay, so first and foremost, William Asher, who was married to Elizabeth Montgomery, he was the director of the vast majority of these of all of Bewitched, right?
Okay.
So the show premieres in 1964, but in 1962, he was the producer of the televised JFK birthday party where the infamous Marilyn Monroe "Happy Birthday, Mr. President" came. That's pretty amazing. One.
Okay.
Connection two, the first day of rehearsals for the pilot of Bewitched, November 22nd, 1963.
You got to be shitting me.
Nope. But then the first day of that Bewitched is like in full like rehearsal is the day JFK is assassinated.
Absolutely.
It's being directed by a guy who did who booked Marilyn Monroe for the, it was, yeah.
That's incredible. So Bewitched is really the link. Also, and I did read a little bit. It wasn't because I didn't already know about Bewitched. And I didn't know how young Elizabeth Montgomery and Dick York died. I think they were 62 and 63 years old. Elizabeth Montgomery died of cancer, and Dick York died, I think, of emphysema or something like that. I mean, you know, he not good, because he hurt his back. Really, I just did not know all this, that they died so young. I thought you were going to go into the cursed portion of Bewitched, but that's worse. The JFK thing is much worse.
Yeah.
That's holy shit. You know, yeah. I just, it's great. It's great. Okay.
What I thought was so interesting about that is, while those don't feel like initially relevant points, again, one of the things that we're going to be talking about, we're going to spend a decent amount of time initially here in the 60s, which is not a time people think of when they think of the Satanic Panic.
You're right. That's you're right.
And mainly, I think it's because a show like Bewitched, so it ran for 8 seasons. Again, it officially premiered in 1964, and it was just a ratings juggernaut. And non-controversial. I need to point that out. Like, this was not one of those. This wasn't like Harry Potter, you know, when like the books are coming out and in real time there was backlash. This was just a huge hit. And it made witchcraft suburban.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about today, I almost wonder, and I know that, listen, I was born in 70. So, but I almost wonder, my mom was born in 53. My grandmother was born, what, in 37, 36, wow. You know, maybe. Yeah, she's still alive, believe it or not. I'm 53. My grandmother is 85. But I was just thinking about the 60s, maybe 62 and 63, or maybe when this came out, November 22nd, 1963, which is still just blows my mind, by the way, Matt. Thank you. Maybe people were a little bit more facts based. Maybe, I mean, did people just not care because there was only a couple stations, or they knew it was fiction? It's just fake. It's just fun to think about witches. But you're right. Today, when you're looking at Harry Potter and stuff like that, we had the far right come out and say that it was satanic.
Right. Exactly. And again, you would actually almost ascribe that kind of mentality to the 50s or 60s. But again, it's worth like just underlining that the entire 8 years that this show ran, so from officially from 64 in the premiere to 1972, and I'm going to also underline 1972 is a year that after we're done with this episode, people will realize that was an incredibly pivotal year.
I'm looking forward to this.
So the thing about Bewitched, again, is it was just it was a normal sitcom based on, like, you know, an unlikely pairing of a husband and wife, and hijinks ensue. This time just happens that there's, you know, Agnes Moorehead is the mother-in-law showing up. Paul Lynde is the uncle showing up every now and then.
I remember.
While this show is, like, again, taking the nation by storm, we have a couple other little things that start, you know, happening. Not only are people just kind of like starting to be like, hey, this witchcraft, like, what is it? Like, it's starting to actually become big business. To the point that in the 60s, the occult had its own trade journal for retailers. It was called the Occult Trade Journal. It was just selling paraphernalia to different, like, Ouija boards and stuff. But it was like, well, how are sales in, like, you know, goat's feet going or whatever? I don't know. Like
real ones? Because that's a little gross. But, I mean, are you talking about, like, brooms, like, for witches to ride? Are you talking about potions? Are you talking about amulets? Are you talking about, like, the cloaks with the hood that comes over it? I mean, what are you talking about with occult gear?
Shit.
I don't even know what to – occult gear.
How about this? Anything that they can say is occult-ish,
yeah,
is there, because that's what people are buying. It's crazy to think that, like, we pretty much based on a sitcom, suddenly people are like finding tarot cards. They're doing tea leaf readings became big again in the 60s.
You know, that's, it's almost, you know, you come out of the, I don't know, the baby boomer generation, right? You're like just like exploding out of it. You're in the hippy dippy 60s. I don't know. Can I just do a full stop here? Can I just already tell people on this show and on the podcast what we've just done? We have already linked the JFK assassination to Bewitched, and I've already highlighted an occult publication or magazine to buy things for the occult. And this is well before the 80s, well before the 70s, working at the 60s during the free love time.
Yeah.
We're looking at these odd things happening that are just incredible. So I just wanted to do, I know we're barely into the show, but people need to realize, I need to brag about how cool that is. I just want to do that right now.
You know what? And to put a fine point on that, we are before the Church of Satan is even established.
Yeah. We're before LaVey. This is pre-LaVey, right?
Yeah, because that's basically the next thing that happens. That's 1966. So we're in season two, if not three, of Bewitched, when suddenly the Church of Satan is established. And look, we can do so much on Anton LaVey. Like, that could be a whole episode.
It's a whole show.
So for our purposes, and again, just know that we know this is the there's a bigger story with him, but here's what you need to know for this show. It was silly and theatrical. That's basically it. Like, his whole, like, ceremonial shtick was just that, a shtick. It was not rooted in any arcane text or tomes. He got it directly from British author Dennis Wheatley's 1934 book, The Devil Rides Out, which had descriptions of that.
So you're telling me he didn't use the Book of the Dead? I'm just so sad that there wasn't really some kind of other fantastical made-up tome that LaVey was actually, you know, referring to at the time. So you're talking about from a fiction book from 1934.
Right.
Again, nothing is new.
Nope.
But it can be metastasized so much easier now. This is fantastic.
Yeah. And also another, in a 1960 book by the same author, Dennis Wheatley, called The Satanist, you know, he kind of shortened the titles, which is great because this was, the villains are interchangeably Satanists and communists. And it seemed, I read a review that like the person said, like, author Dennis Wheatley seemed to sometimes forget which he's referring to. So I just imagine this guy's like just super angry at the world, just typing this book and communist, Satanist, like, ah, just so.
No,
anyway,
by the way, I don't know if you made the connection. You probably did, Matt, but that's no different from today. But go ahead.
Right. Oh, exactly. I mean, how often do we just hear things like, oh, they're the Satanist, communist, fascist, social, you know, just, yeah, it's all of it strung together. So it's meaningless.
Communism is Satanism, unless you're a Christian nationalist who thinks Putin is trying to save the religious right. But go ahead. I digress.
So Anton LaVey loved him some fiction, right? Dennis Wheatley, clearly he read that. Also, to show you how ritualistic and serious his ceremonies were, you know how he consecrated them was he did a reading. Do you any idea, like, what do you think he would be reading to start a ceremony?
Reading to start a ceremony?
Yeah, like an invocation kind of.
Playboy.
Damn, that's good, but no. H.P. Lovecraft, fiction.
Of course it was H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
I thought it might be Hef, because I'm sure that a lot of this Anton LaVey gobbledygook was to get the ladies.
Oh, 100%. There was a sociologist that referred to the devil in 1960s culture as the Playboy devil. And I haven't been able to get that out of my head. Like,
I did not know that when I said Playboy was the actual, this is really freaky. He reads some H.P. Lovecraft,
yeah,
some fiction. We already know it's from fiction books. So Anton really is just a guy who's cosplaying like some kind of, you know, Dark Knight, Black Light, Eyes Wide Shut.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. And, you know, since, you know, he's taken so much from fiction, some, you know, it's now time for fiction to kind of take from him a little bit.
Okay.
And in 1967, so 1 year after he's founded the Church of Satan, a little book called Rosemary's Baby by author Ira Levin comes out. The book obviously makes a huge splash, but the movie actually comes out less than a year later because it was already like optioned and in production before the book hit the stands. They knew it was going to be that much of a hit. And Anton LaVey is in Rosemary's Baby, the movie, as the devil.
Holy crap. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So you have Rosemary's Baby. Anton LaVey is really just making light. I mean, to be honest, he's trolling. You're talking about a 19, right? That's a troll. So he is trolling as the devil, playing the devil. You know, and getting more ladies.
Oh,
he's getting more ladies.
Because we kind of joked about it earlier, but that's the other thing about like Satanism, especially and kind of the occult, witchcraft covens. It's all interchangeable. This is once again another situation, kind of like a few weeks ago we did the episode about demons, and like sometimes they were referred to as like different terms, but it was all meaning the same thing. They just, so if you hear witches, witchcraft, covens, warlocks, they're still in this context only referring to them all as the devil or devils, right? So just know that you sometimes will read a lot about witchcraft in the 60s, but it's the same as Satanism, you know. So they're the same.
I got you. And Rosemary's Baby was spectacularly scary to people at that time, if I remember correctly. Because even when I watch Rosemary's Baby, it's not it's a little campy now. I mean, listen, I watched Rosemary's Baby the first time when I'm in the 80s, teenager, right, when you watch this kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think, you know, I think now if you look back on it, it makes me laugh a little bit. But then I'm like, what the hell, man? Yeah. That sucks. So anyway,
Well, you know what? And so this is what I wanted to say about Rosemary's Baby, that to take it back to kind of Bewitched. So if Bewitched took like the just the concept of witchcraft and made it very safe for like the suburbs and stuff. Well, even though in Rosemary's Baby, the witches, Satanists, you know, famously Ruth Gordon, I think she won an Oscar for her role in the movie. While they're definitely the villains, again, there's almost like it seems like almost gentle, like they don't, they're not the mustache twirling. They're not the cloaked, like, you know, with like weird daggers. Like there's something very almost intellectual upper class about it. And again, I think what you're seeing there a little bit is the Bewitched effect, right? It's kind of normalizing it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's I think it makes it a little bit hip and cool, don't you? I mean, isn't that really where we're at right now? That 1967, 68 now, you're looking from Bewitched on from what you're telling me and what I'm learning and a little bit of what I know. Seems like it's hip and cool, right? You got an Oscar for Rosemary's Baby, man. We got some Satanist fun going on here, you know?
Right. And also beyond just his cameo, I should say, I believe Anton LaVey is credited as like a consultant on the movie. The guy that is reading H.P. Lovecraft and Dennis Wheatley is consulting for like accuracy.
I want to laugh, but I'm going to make a serious point here.
Yeah.
Is that any different from David Grush talking about UFOs with two of the biggest UFO shysters sitting behind him as consultants? Or is that any different than me being asked to be a Bigfoot movie consultant, which I've been asked to do on Bigfoot movies based on that I know about believers in Bigfoot because I use that as an avatar for mythological beliefs and people, you know, people gone wild, you know, with bizarre belief systems. So, I mean, it's interesting that you can actually build your own brand of mythology and then be an expert on something you made up based on fiction and then be paid for that. That's a hell of a grift. It's a fantastic thing.
And think about this. I mean,
and I say fantastic in a sarcastic way, by the way, if you're listening to the pod and YouTube. I'm not saying it's like, but it's fantastic for them monetarily and for, you know, getting the ladies. But I mean, I think that's where we're at right now.
Right. And think about the speed at which that happened. I mean, Anton LaVey founds the Church of Satan in 66. Rosemary's Baby, the movie, is coming out in 68. So he's gone from, and this is all, mind you, before he's written the Satanic Bible. He has not yet written or published that. Which,
when did he write the Satanic Bible?
69. So one more year. So after he's done, after he's stolen from Wheatley and Lovecraft and then been brought in by Roman Polanski, which, you know, great, for to be in this movie, then goes off and writes the Satanic Bible. And once that hits the stands, every weird kid, every weird teenager in high school for decades now is cheering because the Satanic Bible is out.
And you know, what a coincidence. Another one is that he wrote it in 69.
Mm. Yeah.
That's really, really interesting.
Yeah. It was he and Brian Adams. You didn't know that. Actually, you got to really look at the cover. It says written by Anton LaVey and Brian Adams.
And Brian Adams. Summer of 69.
Yeah, that's, you don't know what that song's really about. You play that song backwards, you're in some trouble.
It was the fall of 96.
You're summoning Canadian devil.
So 69, okay. he does the Bible. He does a Bible.
Right.
Or he does the Satanic Bible or the Satanic.
Yeah, he writes that. So again, now that we're coming to the end of the 60s, it's worth repeating all of this from Bewitched to Church of Satan, all that is basically non-controversial. There's not really much of a backlash. Most people, if they're paying attention to it at all, they enjoy the show because it's a funny show. And if they're thinking about the Church of Satan, it just seems kind of like, you know, a different version of hippies. Like, that's, I mean, literally, like, that's, they're just like, whatever. What are they doing?
It's true. Absolutely true. And so, we're not even in 1970 yet.
No. So they get through the 60s essentially unscathed, Satanists, I mean. With one tiny, really grim wrinkle, and that is, of course, the Manson family and the murder of Sharon Tate and stuff also happened in 1969. Now, that really had nothing to do with Satanists or Satan or anything like that. That was all Manson and his, you know, whatever. But the public will not separate that from, they will not separate the idea that, like, somehow it was all Satan, you know, inspired.
Hey, Matt, this might be an unfair question because you've done so much, you know, on timeline research here. When was the month that Anton LaVey's book came out and when the Manson family was killed? Is there a...
So Sharon Tate was murdered in August of 69. Yeah.
That's probably an unfair question because I'm wondering if the book, you know, the Satanic Bible, if it came out afterwards, there wouldn't be that connection. But I'm wondering if the Satanic Bible was published before August of 69. Is that how I was just trying to
would be? Yeah. My assumption would be unless they did the classic thing where they're like out in time for Halloween, you know, which is how all of those books, even the true ones, work. Right.
Yeah. Because if the Satanic Bible, you know, came out 2 months earlier, like June or May.
Right.
I'm just trying to think if maybe there was, we can actually hit that timeline where people would think that there was right.
That would be the thing. And that would at least allow for like a tangible, like reason why people would associate those things other than the fact that, you know, again, Manson just spit out a ton of stuff. Right.
And of course he did.
So like, but this is the first thing because of how like horrendous it is that you start seeing the cracks in like just the impenetrable, like non-controversial Satanism. Now people have got something that they are unjustly associating with Satanism, you know, a real tragedy. So that gets us, you know, through the 60s. And what's going to happen now is we're, you know, going into the 70s, like 70 and 71 is still kind of just, you know, trekking along with the way that the public is perceiving Satanists and Satan.
Well, I think part of my question too in 69, when you're talking about the LaVey's Bible, right? You're talking mm-hmm. about, you know, that timeline of when that was published and when the Manson murders happened. I was a little worried because if that book came out in the earlier summer, like June, June, July, or even like late May, June, I was born 9 months later.
Oh.
I mean, I'm thinking now with some of my really dark thoughts when I was a teenager, like, you know, wanting to spray paint cars and things like that, wanting to go to prom a lot earlier than other people. I'm wondering if Denver initially was Damien.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
I'm wondering if my mom's like, because that D word, right? And I'm like, who the hell names their son Denver? It's probably in an old language, in old English, it means a lush meadow, like you're running through the Denver. Like, am I the actual meadow for the fertilization of Satanism based on the fact that I could have been born 9 months after the actual publication of Satan's Bible? I'm really, you know, and then Rosemary's Baby, right? When that happened also, like, am I Rosemary's Baby?
Satan is his father, not Guy. He came up from hell and begat a son of mortal woman.
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Satan is his father, and his name is Adrienne.
What if they're right that I'm the tool of the Antichrist? That's... I'm coming full circle here. I think you guys realize the brilliance of what I just did to set up the whole god dang 9 months. You see, I think Doug's like, Jesus Christ, you set this up for the last 5 minutes, you dumbass. Like, what are you? You evil bitch. You know, I just, I'm like, what? What is you thought we thought you were being serious, but the whole time you're trying to get 9 months from your birth from 69 to 70. That was the whole line of questioning that sounded serious, Matt. And I apologize. I'm really sorry.
You don't need to apologize because I did promise up top that we are going to be talking about President Antichrist. And I didn't say when that was. I mean, we could be doing some prophesizing here, President Riggleman Antichrist.
I was conceived in 69.
Okay.
Never mind.
I'm just letting that go because this was
ridiculous. Doug's like, Jesus Christ, the edit on this son of a bitch.
So far, we've been pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I think we have. So we're now 70, 71 are sort of the quiet years, the gestational period.
Yes. you seem to have something on the brain. Are you? Are you laboring a point here? Or?
No, oh yeah, I'm belaboring. Thank you, Matt. That was well done. Look, we have lost the show already because it's so fucking good.
So now we're in 1972, and 1972 again is not normally one of those years that is like talked about the way that you hear like people talk about, you know, 1969 or 1932 or whatever. But 1972 is the moment that we go from this kind of acceptance, or just generally kind of not paying attention to like the Satanism stuff. We are now turning, and this is where the satanic panic begins.
Okay, this is good.
In 1972, one of the things that happens is Satan and Satanism makes the cover of Time magazine.
You know, Time magazine seems to be an issue for us many times, but go ahead, sir.
So what's interesting about that particular article is, one, it's a 10-page article. So it is the feature article of the issue. And it is very interestingly, like, again, normalizing the idea of Satanism. So what we learn in this, and it's interesting because I read the whole article, and there was a couple things that stood out, but the opening is basically like seems like is being described as just like a suburban, like potluck dinner.
Until
you realize that, oh, now they're doing, and then they go into like the do it yourself at home Satanist, like altar in the suburbs thing. Again, basically just talked about as like, this is like the Flintstones with the water buffalo lodge. And like, this is just like it's a frat, it's a sorority. It's just what people are doing these days, right? Like that's how the article is written.
So mass media, mainstream media, are you telling me, based on the themes of what we talked about before, Matt, are you telling me that maybe mainstream media is contributing to the susceptibility of individuals to believe in fantasy because of what they're printing to large mass audiences?
I feel like we could refine that down to a bumper sticker and we got it. But yes, no, that is like 100% it, right? Like, remind people, like, because Time magazine used to be what, like in the top 2 to 3 of like publications? Like this was huge.
Time was 60 minutes. Right. I mean, that's Time magazine was 60 minutes. I mean, Time magazine is what you read for the, you no kidding, bottom line, you know, serious type of journalistic things, right? That type of integrity. So if you got a 10 pager, you know, on Satan, or, you know, sort of mainstreaming that. And again, it goes back to a fantastical thing, but again, maybe it's just, you know, hey, this is arising out of something. But again, it just seems like, again, we just find. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I saw it too. I think your political career is over. Satan's getting in the way.
Did that just fall down?
It did.
You know what happened there? I know this is going to freak people out a little bit. The tape gave way. The sticky part just stopped working. But it could have been Satan that said, "Be gone, sticky shit."
Look, there are two options and two options only. Either Satan or the tape just lost its adhesive.
It's either Satan or adhesive loss.
Just one or the other. Yeah.
It's one of those. And I think a lot of people would say Satan. It's freaking Satan.
I, you know? I, um, Not to step on a point.
Because you were conceived in the summer of 69, Denver. And, you know, thinking of that, and I hate to do this, is Bryan Adams a Satanist? I mean, if you think about his song now, the summer of 69, in the way that, you know, it was very much sexual innuendo, right? Yeah. So I'm thinking that he was trying to push this awful message into the masses. And the summer of 69, since that's Anton LaVey and Manson and everything like that, I think we have to start to come to the conclusion that Bryan Adams is maybe on the Anton LaVey Satanist train. So I just, right. I'm not trying, you know, but anyway, go ahead, sir.
Well, you know, hold on. You know what, though? Because his other song, you know, what is it? Cuts Like a Knife. You know who also cuts people with knives? Satanists.
Dude, this is insane. No. Okay, this is just insane.
Something about like, I can't believe we're in heaven.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Doug. What? Doug? What? He...
Oh,
I don't even Bryan know what Adams, to say.
His Christmas song.
Like, so Doug types on our message. I want everybody to know this. His Christmas song is a mockery of baby Jesus. What? That sentence alone is so fantastic. His Christmas song is a mockery of baby Jesus. What do we have, Matt? I'm sorry. I got in the way of the timeline.
Oh, it's okay. No. So the other interesting thing in this Time article, and they don't name a lot of the people for probably because as much as they like to be Satanists, they probably don't want to be named in Time magazine. But one of the guys that was writing the protocols for their cul-de-sac coven, I don't know what to call it, but like, you know, just a suburban Satanist. So he at night wrote the protocols for like their group. He also had, he wrote an ROTC manual for the army.
What?
So day job, night job. Yeah. But they didn't name him. So,
who wrote the manual? Who wrote the ROTC?
They didn't name him, but I'm assuming that, you know, I don't know how many ROTC training manuals there are.
Well, listen, man, I'm in ROTC too. I was an ROTC Air Force cadet. Okay.
Think about this. I need
a blessing.
Think about 1972 and we could probably figure out like what manuals were in wide use. And if the army names the author, I don't know, you know, sometimes manuals don't necessarily, sometimes they have authors' names, sometimes they don't, but this article went out of the way to what they were trying to do was see, they're just people like us that, you know, they're people, you know, whatever they were, you know, doing again, it's the Bewitched thing. They're just normalizing this, right? So here, your guy that like you're, you know, trusting to write the manual to train soldiers, it can also write the manual for the altar in the neighborhood. Yeah.
That's incredible. Do you know that Christine O'Donnell was a Republican candidate who said her first date was on a satanic altar?
I didn't know she said that. I know that she had to respond to saying something.
Yep,
I know
because
how
she
that went.
Yeah, because she said she wasn't a witch, but she said her first date was actually with a dude on a satanic altar where they had food. I don't believe that at all. I think it was much more than using a satanic altar as a picnic table, table.
Well, he had a boombox playing Bryan Adams off to the side.
That, right? Oh my God, summer of 69. But so. But you know, people don't understand what we're seeing on private chat. No. I don't think people understand what's going on right now because Doug says not going to lie. That's hot. I'm just going to say it. It's just going to happen. And it, you know, Doug would have voted for O'Donnell just because of that.
Hey Denver, pretend you're a public official of sorts,
right?
You know, some kind of someone in public life, maybe serving in government or trying to. It's probably not a good day if you have to go on like TV and go, you know what? I'm not a witch. Because I think you're losing if you
guys,
have to do that.
I had to go on TV and said I wasn't into Bigfoot erotica.
That's true, but you won.
But I didn't actually write up real Bigfoot erotica, right? I didn't say, hey,
right.
You know, it was me and three female Bigfoots, you know, and I was staring longingly at these, you know, massive mammaries. You know, I wasn't going into the, you know, this kind of stuff. Right. So, but Christine O'Donnell actually talked about being a witch.
Right. And that was, I think, the main difference.
Visiting a satanic altar. I mean, so she actually had to say, listen, I'm not into that noise anymore. Right. So for me, it was made up, but I did have to do something. I mean, I'm just talking about with this, you know, with that type of information.
Right. But, anyway. but I think you've pointed out like a very like key difference there in where, whether this could happen now, I don't know, but at least at that time, despite like the stupid stuff being thrown at you, like the fundamental truth still held, right? Like no one could, it's not like, you know, once the accusation was leveled, you write Bigfoot erotica. It's not like people could then go find some that you were trying to hide. So
correct.
At least in, while you still had to go through it, at least like the truth held there. And that's, yeah, what did in Christine O'Donnell probably is just the fact that like, well, she made the stupid claim another time.
And plus Satanism in the GOP is not popular.
Yeah, no. Well, we'll get there. Maybe
I'm ready.
It was at a certain point.
So we have Time Magazine, 1972. The gestation period of 70 and 71 is over. Time Magazine, a massive media conglomerate, normalizes or at least puts that out into the public.
Yep.
The public now, it's part of the main, it's memeing, right? Yep. So, you know, for me, Matt, and I know we're going beyond 72. Are you telling me that really is 72 really the, I mean, I know that there was a prequel you talked, which I think is brilliant. Is 72 the hit? Is that where Satanism is like, where we get this sort of the climb? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what happens is there's Time, this article, but also Bewitched ends after 8 seasons in 1972. It ends. King of great timing, a man named Jack Chick, as soon as Bewitched ends, puts out one of his comic book known as a Chick Track called Bewitched. And it's one of the most famous ones. He waited till the show was canceled, probably for legal reasons, I'm assuming, because he actually draws like the Samantha on like the broom. Satan's watching it on TV and like chuckling and going like, ha ha ha. I love how much like this has helped me like infest every, you know, spread my evil because people love this charming show, but they really don't know it's the Trojan horse of Satan. That's what Bewitched
was. That's what the Chick Tract was about.
Yep.
Okay. And I know about Chick Tracks. So, yes. And I think people listening to the podcast and people watching YouTube, you should look these up. I mean, this is, you should look up Chick Tracks. I believe there's a Twitter shitbird, whatever you want to call it now.
Yeah.
They're out of context. They are, but there's definitely, you should look up Chick Tracks and who this individual was. I think it'd be great for people to take a look at that.
Yeah. And they are equally funny and infuriating. So like, you know, depending on what it is, I mean, because they are so overblown melodramatic. So in the Bewitched comic, Satan is portrayed as like just the CEO. He's like conducting of like a major company. He sits at the head of like a big table and he consults with his different minions. And they're like, one is like, oh, it's great. Ouija board sales are through the roof. And they show like sales trend lines. One's like drugs are just doing killer business. It's amazing. So they're kind of, again, is what's interesting is they're trying to make Satan and Satanism every day, right? This looks like a business meeting, but now the shift has happened. It's showing it as evil. Suddenly it's not like, you know, whatever, just like goofy time where people want to dress up. Now we are seeing Satan portrayed very realistically, and I'm putting air quotes around that because there's nothing in a Chick Track that is ever portrayed realistically, but Satan looks human. He's basically wearing a suit, you know, while his surroundings are fire and all that stuff. But yet, like, there's still cubicles. There's still a big table. So you see that, like, now that the nice version of like witchcraft and Satanism is off the air, it makes room for the exact spin on it towards the, now this is sinister.
It almost feels like the boardroom. What was the movie with Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino, The Devil's Advocate? Is that correct? Is that a pull? It's almost like that's the boardroom for The Devil's Advocate is where you head into the middle 70s, right? Now we're heading into the, I don't know where you want to cut off Satanic Panic Part 1, because this is incredible. We've already gone from 10 years, right? We're a decade in to the from Bewitched to LaVey to Manson to Summer of 69 and Bryan Adams. Yeah, then we're actually important. Heading into the Time magazine 72. So now we're really 10 years in.
We're 10 years in the bloom. And I said 72 is like the pivot point. We come into 72 with like still the kind of positive or just again non-controversial. And now we're getting into the later part where suddenly it's going to all turn. And now you're going to start recognizing the Satanism that will be the McMartin preschool trials and the stuff of the 80s. So the other thing about Bewitched, the chick track, right, is this is instrumental in the salvation. And again, take this with a grain of salt, because the person that we have to say is saying he was saved by this is hardly reliable. It's a man named John Todd. John Todd is, I cannot believe more people don't know about him. Like when you think of kind of conspiracy theorists, people that just have like found a grift and just ride it as hard as they can, John Todd is up there with the best of them and the worst of them.
Well, anybody that has two first names, I think it's like the Ricky Bobby effect, right? So if his name is John Todd, you already know there's an issue. And watch, everybody who has a name like Rick John is going to be talk the show like Denver's awful. He's evil. How dare
it's weird. Our numbers really dropped, and it was all the John Todds in the world.
All the two first names, all the people that has a first name as a last name are no longer in the Mighty Peculiar demographic.
You know what?
Completely dropped off.
They're probably Satanists. So you know what?
They probably
we might not want them. So John Todd is a horrible human being, and I'm going to put that up front. The man went to prison. He was a serial sexual assaulter, groomer. So I say that now because while that is important, and obviously that deals with some very real world consequences, again, for the purpose of this show, we are going to focus on the stories and the lore and legend he created and that he then sold. So I want to just say total piece of shit, John Todd, irredeemable. Okay. Set that aside, because now this man, his own timeline is wonderful because there is documented like evidence he had been married about what he was doing during the quote unquote occult revival, which is what Time magazine referred to that span of like 64 to 72. They called that the occult revival.
Got it.
So what he was doing in that time was basically kicking around Christian coffee houses, which were kind of a thing, which seems very weird, but I guess that was the way you couldn't start a whole church. Right. So it was like you found the way the beatniks had the coffee houses in the 50s. Well, in the 60s, they were Christian. It was
they're making a revival right now. Actually, when I was campaigning, I had to go to a Christian coffee house.
Oh, OK.
Yeah. So that was down in south in what we call Southside, Virginia. So my district was 10,000 square miles, Matt. So actually, I had to go to a Christian coffee house. Okay. And that's where I met with certain community leaders in the Christian side. There was down there. Actually, I can't remember if it was Appomattox or Halifax County or Pennsylvania County, but it was actually a Christian coffee house slash where you could check out books and stuff like that. So, and it wasn't really a library. I think it was a Christian coffee house.
Okay.
So that's really interesting that you said that, but go ahead.
So Matt. Is it literally, I mean, this is not one of those things where like it means something else. I mean, literally it's like what you would think, a coffee house, but they serve coffee, but it's just kind of
Christian literature, Christian based, the whole nine yards. I'm not saying it was Christians owning a coffee house.
Right.
It was a Christian coffee house.
Right.
Absolutely.
And it seems like if I'm reading this correctly, it was also meant to kind of take place again at a time when churches, you know, nowadays there's lots of small churches like in weird places like strip malls, right? Where it's
right.
Like,
no, absolutely.
I think at the time that wasn't as common. So I think this was the way if you wanted to start like a youth group or some kind of tangential group to a church, here is a place you could congregate. So in the 60s, while the occult revival is happening, John Todd is basically bouncing around different Christian coffee houses. He's in search of a place to be important, to a sense of prominence. And he is, for whatever reason, really latched on to Christian coffee houses. And he actually gets close to achieving like a decent status. And then he keeps assaulting women. And then he has to move on. I mean, it's like this guy, like he actually, his stupid, like, desire to be like important within this like coffee house circuit, he keeps getting it to work. And then he keeps doing it. I mean, it's just, again, it's horrible, but it's at the same time, you're just like, that there's something there that says something about him. Like, there's something off just in general, right?
Well, I mean, it's almost like, Matt, I don't know, man. I know when people listen to the show, remember we talked about my first book, Bigfoot is Complicated, being like The Breach?
Yeah.
I feel like every time we talk about these people, it's this cynical grifter mentality that's so damaging to people. Yes. And it's the same type of people. It's almost like, you know, we don't believe in reincarnation, obviously.
Right.
But these individuals seem to sprout from the same hellish, I don't know, alternate dimension of grifterverse.
Right.
And they just pop right in right when people are susceptible.
Right. Exactly. And see, you know what? Like, if John Todd had a real talent, that might have been it. Just being able to pinpoint, being able to position himself in just the right place and pinpoint like where he can get an advantage, get a leg up.
What was John Todd's claim to fame? What was his one thing? Like, what was the thing that really put him over the top as far as the vileness of the human being that he was?
Well, okay, setting aside the legit crimes, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So he finally makes a name for himself in the year of 1972.
Okay.
Notice a pattern here.
I do.
So what he ends up doing, and he's going to be the first that does this. So he reinvents his whole decade prior. So instead of bouncing around Christian coffee houses, he was a high-ranking official in the Illuminati, which is actually what's the power that is above Satan. So Satan is actually subservient to the Illuminati, but he's also a witch and like oversaw a coven. And he is now breaking with this because he found the bewitched chick track. And he also saw a movie called, let me get this right, The Cross and the Switchblade, starring Pat Boone. So the 1-2 punch of a Pat Boone movie and Jack Chick's bewitched track makes him go, I can't be in this Illuminati thing. I can't be a warlock anymore. I gotta, and this is 100% true, and this is one of those wonderful moments, I need to go get saved and get converted. And he goes to a Pentecostal church that used to be a burlesque house.
So he built a super grift on top of a grift. He was able to leverage his initial grift into a super grift based on being saved, which we're seeing today. I know we've talked about in past episodes with some of these charismatic leaders who come out and ask forgiveness for something, and then they move on to something else. I think we have to go back to, oh my goodness, who was it? It was one of our favorite shows when we're talking about the individual who used the billboards as almost like,
oh yeah. Well, actually, we haven't done that episode yet on here. We did.
Oh, that's Twitter gosh. Spaces. That was Twitter Spaces. Yeah, that was Wilbur. That was Wilbur. So we probably have to do that because we've done so much together now, Matt, with me, you, and Doug, that we're starting to see these massive parallels between how these grifters actually position their grift and how they utilize their past to build super grifts that take them to another level.
And that's exactly what John Todd does, because basically he now becomes the first to kind of do the, like, I'm going to expose the real truth. Like, I used to be part of it. I was an insider. I was part of the Illuminati, which again is Satanist, is, you know, so he is not only bringing Satanist, like claiming that he was part of being a Satanist and Satanism, but he is now linking the Illuminati, which had obviously been in existence as a not conspiracy theory and a, you know, a group. He's the first one to bridge those two things in this context. And where he really like makes his big splash on the scene, we are in August of 72, right? He gets on a local TV show in Phoenix. It's called The Gap. And it's like just like a televangelist show.
Okay.
72. And this is where he, with a completely like straight face, goes, and let's go back to Mr. JFK. John Todd tells the audience that like JFK is alive and well, and he knows this because
while
he was part of the Illuminati and a practicing occultist witch warlock guy, he hung out on a yacht with JFK. Now, you might ask, how could this guy get on a yacht with a not assassinated JFK? Well, it's because his previous career, like what he did as he was ascending the ranks of the Illuminati. Well, but he was also the Kennedy family's personal warlock.
Well, I mean, obviously. No, so I mean, so here's the thing.
And this is a launching point for a career. Like, that's not a career ender. That's the beginning.
It's not just a career. It is the beginning of the memeing of the JFK is alive shit that we see today in the GOP, baby.
Right.
I mean, we go from two dicks and Bewitched,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
We go from two dicks to Anton LaVey, right? Through the JFK assassination, which just happens to coincide with Bewitched,
yep.
Right? That the Bewitched, was it the pilot or the first?
The first rehearsal. So literally the day work actually begins.
We go through Rosemary's Baby, Anton LaVey trolling in 1969. We go the gestational period of 70, 71. You get time that actually normalizes it in 72. Then you have John Todd, who said he was part of the Illuminati and Satanists, then finding Jesus based on a bizarre chick track and based on the fact that JFK is still alive, by the way, and says he was the individual warlock for JFK's family, which goes back to the Illuminati actually being connected to Satan. And now here we are. So that's 1972. We go all the way now, 2022. Right now, we're, what, 50 years?
Right.
2022, 2023. And we have a guy parading around where people think he's JFK being alive. We have the QAnon conspiracy theories, a conspiracy sticky bomb with the Illuminati and all the things that we have there. And we go back to the susceptibility and the memeing. We go back to 1947 and UFOs. We go back to 1958 and Bigfoot. We go back to the freaking folk monster, by the way, I think it was also 1972. So you have all this happening. And all we're saying is that we have the grifters and the super grift basing fantastical beliefs and magical thinking that is now being used for policy makers in the United States today.
Yes. And you know what? There's one other thing that John Todd introduces into the discussion. Now, it does not take off here, but you'll recognize this as something that does take off. He is one of the first prominent people to basically be like, oh, yeah, you know what? Children are being abducted and tortured for nefarious purposes through Satanism and stuff like that. Again, he makes this claim a lot. It does not catch on when he's doing it.
You got to remember, too, now you have a guy who's actually bridging to the protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Oh, he is big into that, just so you know.
Right. So now we have guys. This is what's so exciting, right? I love this because I've dealt with it in the real. As you remember, I am the tool of the Antichrist. I've been called that. So now let's just be honest. We're having a great time here. It's a party.
It's a fucking party.
Yeah. But we have the whole gamut of how fantastical, magical thinking, belief systems, and a direct line to the supernatural. People believe that are making policy for the United States of freaking America. And we look at the JFK assassination, which actually was, I had actually written a book. It was because he knew that Bigfoot was being studied. But right. I mean, so, you know, so we have all this happening. Listen, it's not in a vacuum, everybody. Yep. It's not in a vacuum. And we still have the normalization of crazy through mass media. And we have the fact that susceptibility right? Seems to be an issue throughout the American experience. And the other thing that you've always pointed out, Matt, is that we have, what is it? It was the favorite saying. It was just in my head and lost it. It's the fact that there's phantom problems, real solutions to phantom problems. Yes. And we have this whole thing happening based on the fact that you had a guy with two first names, Anton LaVey, two dicks, and, you know, bewitched, and a baby that came out looking like a really ugly Satan baby. That's really what we got with Rosemary's Baby. I mean, that's, here we are.
That's America in a nutshell.
That's America.
Obviously, great. John Todd, unbelievable. Like, is just a complete fabulist, right? Like, this is obviously, like, I mean, everything's laughable on its face. He was briefly, in 1969, in the U.S. Army. He was stationed in Germany for a little bit, and then he got discharged due to psychiatric reasons and drug use.
Was he discharged in 69?
He was. He only lasted a couple months.
Dude, 69 is a hell of a, I mean, what a year.
So the official, I can't remember the official wording of the diagnosis, but like he had the thing where had difficulty distinguishing between reality and fantasy is what the Army said when they booted him in 69. You know, before he started doing this, you wonder how this worked for him.
There's a cascading effect for fabulous, because we talk about laughing about this crazy guy, but you think about how prevalent it is today.
Yeah.
It's all fun and games until somebody shoots up a comet ping pong in 2016. Right. That's the issue that you have, is that people that are susceptible are also susceptible to violence, in defense of belief systems that are completely made up.
Yeah. And you know what? This is a little side note, but I think this is worth, pointing out, just for our, like, I mean, I feel like we almost need like conspiracy bingo card, 'cause this episode will basically, you'll get a bingo, because, the wife that was killed at Ruby Ridge.
Yeah.
Her and her husband hung out with John Todd, and they thought he was too much of a neo-Nazi for them. The Ruby Ridge people looked at John Todd and went, yeah, I don't know, that guy's a little too extreme.
We have linked Bewitched to Ruby Ridge.
Yeah. And that's just a side note. That's
what's the mic drop look
that's
like?
That's like a footnote.
The Mighty Peculiar.
Oh, wait, hold on. Because you know what? I can't hear the mic dropping, because you know what I do hear? I hear a witchmobile like rolling up, because we're still in 1972.
Is there really a witchmobile?
You better believe there's a witchmobile. It is a mobile occult unit that traveled the U.S. and Canada, where Bryan Adams, Satan, is, from 1972 to 1974.
Wait, there was a witchmobile from 72 to 74 that actually was part of Canada, too. And we've already ascertained that Bryan Adams could be a Satanist because of his Summer of 69 song, because that's when, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. I just don't believe, I can't imagine there's actually a witchmobile. I mean, there I know is. That it's okay. There's a witch. Okay, that's insane.
So
it's like the Ghostbusters of 1972 to 74.
So the witchmobile is like the world's most hilarious, like worst attraction ever. Because so what it turns out to be, I mean, it's like a trailer that is being pulled, but like inside the trailer is occult paraphernalia and dangerous things like tarot cards. A Ouija board, I don't know, maybe a cloak of some kind. I don't. Point is, it was all just completely over the counter bought stuff that they put up in this trailer.
Oh, wait. It wasn't to stop witches. It was to
it's to advertise show people witches? What to avoid. But really, it's doing the thing where it's like, oh, why are you so intrigued by my magical box of mystery? I told you to leave it alone. Don't touch the magical box of mystery. That's what the
Hey, guys, I'm going to bring back the witchmobile. I'm bringing it back right now. So
did you just
I'm going to
like
yeah.
raid it?
Yeah.
Did
no,
you loot the witchmobile?
I did. I looted the witchmobile, and I'm going to start it all over again. Like I'm going to roll up in your neighborhood like an ice cream truck. And if I can just allow a couple of plugs here, Denver. On my Witchmobile, you'll be able to buy the Anton LaVey satanic ritual Blu-ray.
Blu-ray. That's the most satanic format there was.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Laserdisc was just way too holy. And we got the Satanic Mass, right? On red vinyl. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Limited edition. And also, if you act now, you can get Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath on vinyl. First edition. No, but the great thing is if you put your nose in it, you could smell 1973. Totally legit, guys. This is what we're doing.
Hail Satan.
Yeah.
So we are not quite done yet.
I hope not. I hope Doug, this turns into Woodstock.
Doug, so you're telling 73, what did it smell like? It
smells like despair, Denver.
Sulfur and despair. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that what 73 smells like? Is it like sulfur and despair? Despair.
Yes.
In the worst French cologne. I think it's all of that in one, you know.
Yes.
You get that from Bed Bath and the Great Beyond.
Oh, very nicely done, Matt. Oh, my goodness. Nicely done.
So, okay. I promised a little talk about, a little presidential election. So, okay, let's leave. Oh, okay. Hold on one second. Just a little tease mid-show for next week. So a very, very prominent character, basically a John Todd clone, like mm-hmm. named Mike Warnke, made his debut in 1972. He's also the guy, he basically... goes like, yeah, I was a high druid priest. I oversaw covens in three cities with 1500 members, and I actually sacrificed babies. Like, he admits to like literal murder and then says, but like, it's cool. Like, I'm reformed now. I'm a stand-up comedian, but I'm also like going to tell you like about Satan. Tune in next week for that, because Mike Warnke is going to sell out like arenas like Seinfeld did, but in the 80s during the Satanic Panic. But he makes his debut in 1972 alongside the Witchmobile, to which he ended up driving around. So Mike Warnke will be next week.
Next week. Okay.
But okay. So now we get to 1976, right? John Todd decides he is about to go. You know, this is like in a heist movie when like the guy's like, look, I'm out. But like, I got one big score, right? One last thing. So John Todd's going to make a mistake in that he is now going to lean into prophecy and he's going to predict the future. Right. And
that's where the super grifters go wrong. That's where they go wrong.
It's his downfall. Right now,
they can't help themselves
right before they put out a record.
So what he does is he looks at that that presidential election in 1976, particularly the Republican primary at first, and he goes, I like Reagan. Reagan's my guy, right? But it turns out that we couldn't have Reagan because we needed to make way for the Antichrist. The Antichrist is not Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford is a pawn of the Antichrist who, while yet being the incumbent president, was also there to sabotage the primary for Reagan because we need to elect one James Carter Antichrist to the presidency, which we did.
If Jimmy Carter dies before this episode comes out or the day this episode comes out, I quit.
Then I believe everything I've said. Like, I take it
right.
off.
Like, I was going to say Jimmy Carter. It's so funny you were saying that, Doug. Jimmy Carter's still alive.
Yeah.
My worry was I was actually going to say he's 99.
Yeah, I know.
I swear to God, if Jimmy Carter dies the day on Wednesday, I'm done. I think we're done. I just something's up. You know, I think we're.
I think we're
going to check behind your ear for that mark.
Why do you think I'm wearing long sleeves? You don't see the brands right now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's like Russian tats. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me to say Jimmy Carter's the Antichrist, looking at his body of work even then is pretty amazing. I have to say.
And
it's amazing.
So
I actually think it was Walter Mondale, but there you go.
Well, okay. Hey, you know what? I mean,
come on,
Minnesota is a hotbed of Satanists. So
come on,
Minnesota is the Canada of the United States.
It's a hot take. It's a hot take.
Yep.
It's a hot take. If Mondale is the Antichrist, Mondale.
I mean,
he's behind Jimmy Carter.
You seriously picked like just the second most like innocuous politician.
I tell you, because you know the follow on to those Antichrists was Dukakis. I mean, let's just be honest.
No, well, yeah, that one we all got.
I mean,
so okay, so Denver, you've got you have a lot of opinions and a lot of to say about a president who
this guy
does not win re-election and does not accept those results. I need to ask you something.
Sure.
So, okay, we do know that Antichrist Carter, President Antichrist, does win one term. And apparently the Antichrist needs to run for re-election and can't pull it off. And accepts the results. So the Antichrist is like more democratically like minded than Trump. Is that?
No, you got it backwards.
Mm.
You got it backwards. Okay. I think Trump learned that in order to be what you need to be as the Antichrist, you have to fight those elections. I think what he saw with Carter is that Carter was probably the first Antichrist. And he saw that Carter, thinking that somehow if he accepted that, that Carter could somehow be reaccepted into society, that maybe that would happen or that Carter could have another chance down the road. But that's not how it happened. So I think what Trump is looking at is the new Antichrist is he's saying, hey, I have to fight what's happening right now. Now, there's a flip to this. What if the Antichrist shit? Fuck me. What if the Antichrist was actually Biden? And now the flip to this, if you want to argue the other side of it, is that Donald Trump isn't the Antichrist. He saw that Biden was the Antichrist, but they had to fight for the election because the Antichrist can actually manipulate algorithms, can control Italian satellites, can do all the things that we saw to actually change the election. So he knew he had to fight. So he had to bring up this massive fundraising effort because if you look at the new strain of Christianity, which is the fact that Christianity is actually about wealth now. You know, you have the Christians that say that's about wealth creation. That's okay to be rich as a Christian. You have the people, the evangelicals that are getting money. He's saying, really, money is not mammon. Money is actually the key to fighting the Antichrist. And I have to do that in any way that I can. Even if I have to lie and make up conspiracy theories, is actually for the greater good, because an imperfect tool is actually used for perfect missions. And that's what evangelicals think, is that an imperfect tool could be used for a perfect objective if that's Christianity. So I think that's the other side of this. If he's the Antichrist, he's saying that he had to fight. If he's not the Antichrist, he's saying that the Antichrist actually won and he had to fight that with any way that he could, because it's okay to lie in the service of the Lord. So anyway, those are kind of some of my philosophies or some of my thoughts on this.
Wow. Amen.
Yeah. Hallelujah. In fact,
I will say that.
Was that good? Did I cover both sides?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Yeah.
You both sides, the Antichrist. That was amazing.
That's exactly what I wanted. Jesus. Oh, sorry.
Hold on.
I said Jesus.
So I'll just add that, like, Antichrist, President Antichrist did go on to a distinguished post-presidential career with creating Habitat for Inhumanity.
Oh, man. Almost as good as Bed Bath & Beyond, by the way, Matt.
Yeah.
That's a great. Okay.
Good. Let me in wrap up, that was John Todd's major downfall, was basically he started to he predicted certain outcomes, didn't happen.
Because back then America had something it doesn't have now, which is vintage at this point, but that's called shame.
Or standards, yeah. I mean,
Doug, I almost believe this episode is JFK Jr.'s assassination, Satanists and two dicks. And I think that's really what we've just sort of covered, was this this whole thing. Doug, what?
I'm keeping it inside.
So let me ask you this. You guys want to just.
Like alchemy. I'm keeping it inside.
Like
it
inside. That's right.
Would you guys like just another couple, like if you guys are superstitious about like dates keep like reoccurring as patterns. I just want to add these two things that I think are very interesting.
Let's hear this.
So John Todd made his last public what he was calling witchcraft training seminars. Now, those are weirdly worded because it was how to fight witchcraft, but it made it sound like you'd maybe it was
witchcraft training seminars. What do we?
Right.
We should sell those on our merch page.
Dear God, we should.
Because then the Illuminati was coming to kill him, so he had to stop being so public. That was on Friday, October 13th of 1978. Right.
Okay.
Okay. So Friday, October 13th. Now we are recording in the month of October. We've just recently had a Friday, the 13th of October. Do you know what just happened on Friday, October 13th, 2023?
Lay it on me, Matt.
The house, the bewitched house, was demolished. The studio, like they tore it down.
That is it's incredible. It's incredible. I got nervous.
Like I was like, I don't know. This is just
You're totally going to kill Jimmy Carter. You're totally going
to kill him. I am. So, okay. Hey, guys.
Matt Anderson is the murderer of Jimmy Carter.
So, I need to put your knowledge to the test really quick.
What? That guy.
He did it. Anyway, we got to run.
Cool. But it's been a long episode.
But we also have a winner from the signed copy of The Breach. This week goes to someone with two names.
So John Todd? Please not John Todd.
No, it's Jennifer Tracy. So
I think I okay. Dude, congratulations, Jennifer. And also the rule about like being awful having two first names does not apply to women.
No, okay. It doesn't apply to women, only men. Yeah, okay. There we go. Thanks.
Right. Good save, thanks, fellas. Yeah. All right. Well, join us next week for part two of the satanic episodes.
And long live Jimmy Carter.
Yes, please
don't die. We'll see you next week. Sign us out. Somebody.
Later. The Mighty Peculiar is out.
See ya.
Satan is real, working in spirit. You can see him and hear him in this world every day. Satan is real, working with power. He can tempt you.